You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Expressed on this program are the responsibility of those who make them. They do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates.
Hey folks, welcome to the show. Wherever you happen to be all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth, thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. And those of you who are joining us for the very first time, a special welcome. I'm glad you're here, and I hope you make a habit out of it. It's a really good habit to get into. Now, if it is your first time, you may not be aware of some of the freebies that we have for you, some good stuff. But probably the most important is our free weekly newsletter. It is an e-zine. It comes in your email. And you can subscribe absolutely free, no strings attached, truly no strings attached. All right? And you do that by going over to kevinsmithshow.com. At kevinsmithshow.com, you will see in big red letters where to subscribe. And just click that in about 10 seconds. You're in, and that's it. You know, one of the things that I've talked about a lot here on this show is I've talked a lot about cloning. I've talked a lot about the genetic stuff that's going on, and some of it I think is really good science, and some of it I think is sort of Frankensteinish. Some of it I would just say, well, that's interesting, and wonder where this is leading. I guess that's how I feel about what is going on with the researchers at the Venter Institute over in Rockville, Maryland. They have been able to create a man-made copy of the genome for a bacterium. And, of course, that's the first time this has been done. They've been able to duplicate a complete set of DNA for this bacterium. Now, they haven't been able yet to switch it on and make it live. They don't know how to do that yet. But there it is. There is the DNA for that bacterium. Now, I wonder if you give it some thought, if that is science we really ought to be getting into. Imagine the implications for law enforcement if the technology to make artificial copies of someone's DNA gets out into the public. You know, all you would have to do if that became common technology, if you wanted to commit a crime and blame it on someone else, is just order up some of their DNA, have it artificially constructed, and then just kind of leave it around the crime scene. You know what I mean? I think it could really cause DNA evidence to become not admissible evidence in court. I wonder if they've given any thought to that. I think they should. And again, I, you know, often refer to this type of science as Jurassic Park science, because there is a line in Jurassic Park where the scientist says, "We were all so busy asking if we could. Nobody asked if we should. We'll be back. My guest this evening is John Mitchell. We'll be talking about his experiences as he attempted a couple of years ago to go out and sort of observe Area 51. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. Okay, folks, this is what you've been waiting for, your vacation of a lifetime. It awaits your arrival down under in beautiful and historic Hobart, Tasmania. And to make sure your holiday really is a dream come true, you'll be staying at the Bath Street Apartments. Here are just a few of the things that you'll enjoy in your home for the holidays. Stunning water and mountain views from all windows and from your own private balcony or veranda. Modern furnishings, a full modern kitchen with all new appliances, oven and hot plates, fat-free grill, full-size refrigerator, large-capacity microwave oven, cappuccino machine, dishwasher, and enough crockery, cutlery, and utensils to satisfy anyone's culinary desires. The lounge room has an extensive range of electronic home entertainment equipment, including, now get this, a big-screen TV, free digital satellite, pay TV on Foxtel OnStar with over 60 channels, DVD, video, wireless broadband connection, free local telephone calls from the in-room telephone with your own private telephone number so loved ones and friends can call you directly. The bathroom? Wow, the bathroom has a large spa bath, separate shower cubicle, ceiling-mounted heat lamp and fan and hair dryer, and it just gets better and better. Folks, you've got to see Bath Street Apartments, so click the banner over on the Kevin Smith Show website or just go to bathstreetapartments.com.au. Your dreams are awaiting your arrival. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Kevin Smith here. Do you have your Kevin Smith Show t-shirt yet? No? Well, let today be the day you step into the world of galactic fashion. Visit the Kevin Smith Show online store and get yours today. My guest this evening is John Mitchell. Now, John, when I first heard about John, it came to me as a recommendation from a listener. I saw the name, and I wondered about this because my best friend in high school was a guy named John Mitchell. We went everywhere together. We did everything together. We spent time, all the time together. I was a musician. He was a musician. You know, it was just one of those buddy deals. It's not the same guy, but it's a good name. He's John Mitchell, my friend, is certainly a good guy, and it got my attention. Well, I checked into it and found that this John Mitchell has a very, very interesting story to tell about his experiences with UFOs and Area 51 and assorted other things. John, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you.
You're a little bit younger than my friend. He's 1 year younger than me, and that makes us both old guys.
Okay, yeah, so. I'm 37. Mm-hmm.
But you, a couple of years ago, almost 2 years ago, it was February 2006, you decided to go out and check out Area 51 for yourself and went out to Nevada, and some strange things happened.
Yeah, that's right.
So why don't we go back to that and just tell us, first, why did you want to go see Area 51, and then what happened when you got out there?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's almost just as strange to me, the first part of that question. because I wasn't really, a UFO buff or UFO researcher or anything like that, I just had a minimal amount of interest, which was really only sparked by, some of the documentaries I had seen on the History Channel. So why I actually decided to go out there is kind of in question even to me, because so many paranormal things and strange things happened even before I left to go out there. On the summary page on my website, it kind of explains a rundown of all that stuff. But at one point, I was even deciding that I wasn't going to go to Area 51 and make that trip. And just a couple of days after that, I ended up finding a photograph in Popular Science magazine of an enormous UFO. The whole story is on the summary page of how I came about discovering this, and that's what actually propelled me forward to go out there to Rachel and see what I could see. I actually filmed a UFO on my plane seat on the way over there from my plane window, and then once I arrived in Nevada, which was on the 13th of February, I headed straight out for Rachel. The next day, the 14th, got some information from some locals of where to go to get some good video footage of the jet fighters, actually, which were out there. I had decided to go to Rachel during this thing called Red Flag Week, which is a international war games that they put on from Nellis Air Force Base out there. And my thought was, you know, if I went out there and, you know, barring any UFO sightings or anything paranormal, at least I'd be able to film some fighter jets, you know. So I commenced out to this area where the locals had told me to go, which is called Coyote Summit, and filmed from up there just a little bit over 20 minutes of film. And it's everything about that film is just very strange, the content and how the content came to be. I filmed just over three dozen UFOs in a little bit over 20 minutes, which is a rate of nearly two UFOs a minute. So it's really something to see.
Did that surprise you?
Yeah, you could call it surprise for sure. The way it went down after my entire experience, which was mostly, as far as the paranormal part of it's concerned, mostly happened on the 14th, in the evening of the 14th. After I came back home, my plan from the beginning was just to watch this footage in slow motion, see what I could see. And I wasn't watching. I got home on a Saturday, and I wasn't watching video for 10 or 15 minutes, and I spotted the first one. And it's the one on my website. I have a UFO video section off to the right-hand side column, and on one of those videos, you'll see a video where I turn into a off the side of the road, and as I'm turning my Jeep, a UFO comes from over the top of a mountain range, which is quite a distance away, and goes right over the top of my Jeep. And that was the first one I discovered. And then, of course, that gave me plenty of reason to keep looking, and I just kept finding one after another. You know, it was just absolutely exciting, and a lot of other feelings, you know.
Well, let's go back to the 14th. You said on the night of the 14th, you were out in Nevada still.
Right.
And you had something strange happened.
Right. What had happened was when I went up on top of Coyote Summit, there's about four or five other people up there that were actually up there for the war games, you know, to videotape, take some photographs. And I met a gentleman up there. I haven't spoken to him since, so I won't use his last name, but his first name is Gary. And he's a guy that's been coming out there to Rachel for about 4 years now during the red flag exercises and knew his way around the area. And I told him I was interested in, I told him what I was there for, you know, that I also wanted to see if I could, you know, capture any UFOs, and that wasn't really his bag. But he agreed to show me around the area and took me out. First, him and his friends and I, we all went out to the back gate of Area 51 and took some photos out there. And then he ended up taking me out to a campsite, which I would end up staying out there the rest of the day by myself and into the evening. And, yeah, during the daytime on that film, I filmed just right around probably about 8 or 9 more UFOs, a little bit better than half a dozen UFOs during the daytime. At nighttime, it's kind of funny, you know, as the sun, you know, began to go down, and I'm not ashamed to say it, I began to feel a little vulnerable, you know, a little scared. And, you know, being, you know, 20, 30 miles out in the middle of the desert by myself, it kind of started to dawn on me how alone I was. And so I ended up jumping inside the Jeep and attaching the camera to the window and just filming some more from there. And then what's really weird is since I just continually shot one tape after another, you actually hear me on the audio of the tape saying that I'm going to pause the camera now. I don't remember saying that, and I don't know why I paused the camera, but that's where I experienced a missing time period. And
how much time?
Now this is a guess. I've used the almanac, and the lucky thing was is that I actually filmed the rising full moon after I came out of this thing. And so I've compared sunset, you know, rough estimate of sunset to moonrise, which I filmed, and it's a roughly about 5 hour difference there from when I stopped filming to the time that I turned it back on and caught the moon rising. So that's how I've estimated the time. And the strange thing is you know, when I turn the camera back on, you hear me. I know my own voice, and I sound extremely out of it. It's real spotty as far as memory goes during this time. And it appears that I'm speaking to someone or something inside the Jeep with me. I ask somebody, and it's right, and this is on the website as well, you hear me ask now. And as soon as I ask now, you can hear me unlock the camera, and then, of course, you see the camera move position. And within about 60 seconds or so, actually a little bit less than 60 seconds, I think exactly it's 42 seconds, the second UFO comes flying out of center frame. After I ask somebody or you hear me, you know, ask out loud and then I reposition the camera, this occurs. And I kind of skipped one thing. When I actually turned the camera back on to begin with, that's when the very first UFO, which is there's a still shot on the front page of my website. That's the first one that comes right from over the top of my Jeep, down into, like it wanted to be filmed, down into the center frame of the camera. It changes shape and just blinks out into a little spot of light, just in a flash. And it's one of the oddest looking UFOs I've ever seen. And out of a little bit over 24 UFOs, those are the only nighttime ones I have. Everything else is taken in broad daylight.
Do you have now any memory of what happened during that missing time?
No, I don't. I've spoke a little bit. I've done did an interview a while back and spoke on that as well. That I'm definitely open to all of this. I definitely want to look into that to try to find, you know, somebody's professional who's done this before and knows what they're doing. I'd love to go into some type of regressive hypnosis for it and try to bring, you know, some type of tangible memory of what I was physically involved, if it was physical, if I physically went somewhere, or I don't know if I physically left the Jeep or not, but I know I have this missing time period. And one thing that, you know, I'm not embarrassed to say any of this, because I think these are things that people who are going through this stuff just need to come up, you know, just start speaking up about it and talk about it, not worry about the ridicule. The strangest thing, and in a way it's a godsend, is that I have this implant at the lower right-hand base of my skull. It's a bump just under the skin, and it sure wasn't there, you know, before I went out to Area 51, and it's been there now on, going on 2 years. And so I guess that's, besides just tons and tons of video and photographic evidence, that's the one physical, tangible thing that I walked away with. You know, there's definitely a bump under the skin there, and pretty sure I know what it is.
Have you had a doctor to look at this this bump, or have you had it x-rayed or anything?
Actually, I have a an acquaintance who's a physician, and he okayed a MRI for me, and we did that, and nothing showed up, but the way it had to be done, and we couldn't say that we were looking specifically for that in the MRI, but so I still have those MRI films, and not being a doctor, I don't really know what I'm looking at, but there's nothing obvious there anyhow. And the other thing that I've done is there's a doctor, Roger Lear, out of Florida, who is a gentleman who has taken out, the last thing I read about him, he's got about a dozen of these implants that he's taken out. They've been scientifically analyzed through the whole gamut of analyzation, from gastrospectral analysis on up, and these are being found out to be made out of components or elements that aren't found on Earth, even. So they're definitely from someplace else, and there's definitely a lot more individuals than just myself that are being affected this way.
Yeah, Dr. Lear has been on this show, and quite an interesting individual. We also recently had on the show his latest, I guess you could say, patient, a person from whom his team has removed an implant. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about that one, and that gentleman's name is Jeff, the interesting thing about that implant is that they were able to determine that it was transmitting, and it was transmitting on the same frequency as a deep space probe.
Sure.
And I found that to be quite interesting.
Very interesting, yeah. And also, though, I'd have to say not surprising to me anyhow.
What do you think this implant is doing?
That's a good question, you know. I want to be 100% upfront and honest with everybody from the get-go. That's the base that I work from with all of this. And there's things that are happening, even things that have transpired since I started to build the website and do these things, that are extremely paranormal to me, just different events that have happened. And the implant itself, I think, plays some kind of role.
What are some examples of weird stuff that's happened to you?
Okay. Well, I have a couple of stories that'll probably curl your hair a little bit.
That would be welcome, because I have very little hair, and any of it that's able to curl, I'd welcome it. So go for it, man.
Okay, I'll see what I can do for you.
All right.
I'll give you a good, I'll give you a positive and a negative. On the positive side, if you go to my website and you go to the links page there on the website, and you scroll all the way down to the bottom, you'll see where it says, "Do you see the spider?" And to a lot of people, it's going to be kind of off-the-wall stuff, but it all, for me, it makes perfect sense. When you click on that link, anyhow, on "Do you see the spider?" you'll see an article from National Geographic magazine on pages 78 and 79, where I found something that's really strange. It's you've heard of Mr. Jones, Alex Jones, that a couple of his talks he's talked about mentioned spiders in conjunction with the Bohemian Grove and some of these elitist organizations. Evidently, one of their code words for human beings that they don't consider worthy of, you know, not killing or whatever their deal is, they call them spiders. And I know it sounds a little strange, but it's real. And when you go to the Bohemian Grove in California, there's actually a sign that was filmed in one of the Alex Jones clips where you can see where it says, "Note, you will find no spiders here," or something to that effect. So it's a real word that these Illuminati use, these Bohemian Grove people. And lo and behold, on pages 78 and 79, I found in this photograph, it's an American hospital in Iraq, and here sits this poor Iraqi kid, about 14 years old, with part of his body blown apart. And in the back of this room is this huge mural, and it's upon first glance, it looks like two hands shaking, one with an Iraqi flag draped over it and the other with an American flag draped over it, and the head of the American eagle in the center. When you really look at it super close, you can see distinctly that it's a spider. It's an American hand crushing a spider. And you just have to take a look for it yourself, connected to the links page there. But what I'm getting at is very interesting how I came about that. Working on my ship, we have this group of gentlemen, they're International Seafarers Organization. It's a Christian organization that goes around to the different docks when our ships pull in. And these gentlemen belong to a variety of different Christian organizations, but they'll come on board and they'll bring different magazines for us, maybe a few Bibles and just different reading material, and they'll come aboard and have lunch with us and talk. And if there's somebody that's so inclined to want to pray or have any kind of activity like that, then they can do so. These gentlemen came on the dock at one of our ports, brought a stack of magazines, and I met them and shook their hand, and they seemed like really nice guys, talked to them for a little bit. I went into the rec room. First thing I did was to pick up this exact National Geographic magazine and turn exactly to page 78 and find this photograph instantaneously. And to me, that speaks a lot. The way that that came about and the way that I was able to reveal that hidden Illuminati design of the spider came about from these Christian fellas coming aboard and trying to do, you know, something good for us. So that's a positive story.
How is that linked to the implant?
I don't know that it does. I'm not trying to link it to the implant in particular. I'm just trying to give you a couple of how I've come across this information. You know,
You said though that since the implant, that there have been, you know, some strange paranormal things that have happened to you.
Yeah,
you're not saying that they're necessarily linked to the implant, though.
That particular story may not be, but I think it's all linked together in that whatever is happening to me, Kevin, it's coming from a lot of different angles. Information is brought to me in a lot of different ways, and a lot of it, I think it's because of the type of individual I am. I can see the way things are going, the way things are brought to me. Some of it's positive and some of it's negative.
So do you think that since the implant happened, that you have had a different insight or a better perspective or something?
Absolutely.
Like that? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I was completely asleep, like the majority of the masses of this whole planet are. I was completely asleep to what's going on. And, you know, just the fact that if the only thing that had happened to me was I went out to Area 51 and shot these UFOs that are pretty phenomenal, that would have been one thing, but it didn't stop there. You know, I went on to just one thing after another. Just my whole life was basically just turned upside down by this. And I don't regret that because, you know, on the positive side of that, I'm awake now. I can see what's really going on. And I'm making it my personal business to try to show other people, you know, some things, some insights that I know they're not aware of. And so that's where I'm coming from. But, yeah, I do have, I guess I misunderstood you about the what you're looking for, the connection between events and the implant itself.
Well, I just wondered if the implant, if you had noticed anything happening that you could link to that implant being there.
Sure. Well, if you want that in particular, the one thing, now this is, once again, it's a stretch for people. I know that it's going to sound pretty off the hook.
We've only got a minute till break, so have to break in, we'll get the rest of it after the break, but go ahead.
Sure, I think I can do this one in a minute. On the Big Brother page itself, I spoke on this in my last interview as well, I find that the Big Brother page itself to be paranormal, and that if you connect the links, you can find encrypted text in within the Big Brother page. So I, to answer your question, I've even had to ask myself, did I write this page or am I being helped with it? And if so, then I would certainly put something like that in the position of, well, I probably got this information to do this way through the implant somehow, for sure.
The doctor that's a friend of yours, he no doubt examined at least somewhat physically the bump that you're talking about, right?
He put his finger on it. That's about it. To say, yes, I feel it too, it's there.
Okay, so he's verified that it's there. You had the MRI. It doesn't show up in the MRI. What did he comment about that, the fact that it doesn't show up?
Well, now, once again, I haven't taken this MRI to a physician who knows what they're looking at. Like I said, I don't know exactly what I'm looking at. I know how to find my neck area and the bottom of my skull, and I didn't see anything. But, you know, I haven't. the doctor's a friend, but it's not somebody that I can just take these things to and say, okay, now look for this implant. You know, he has to be more professional than that, I think. But, you know, he was able to get the MRI done for me anyhow. And like I said, I still have the film, so...
Okay, we have to cut away for a break, and when we come back, John, we will continue discussing these strange things that have happened since your visit to Area 51. We'll be back, folks. And we are back. My guest is John Mitchell. John, you're a merchant marine.
Yes.
And so you spend a lot of time, I know you're on the Great Lakes, but I'll say at sea. You spend a lot of time on board the ship.
Right.
Have you ever, while at sea, have you ever seen UFOs?
No. As a matter of fact, I haven't, which is kind of... I don't know, maybe it's a little bit strange considering how much I've filmed, but things that I've seen with my own two eyes are few and far between. I've explained before, when I was out there at Area 51, I saw just a couple strange things, not anything really to write home about. A small light up in the sky that broke off into two pieces way, way up there when I was actually at my campsite at night. And a strange, perfectly round shadow that I have on film that I filmed, and it was completely a clear sky. There wasn't a cloud in the sky, and there's absolutely no reason at all that the shadow was there, and it kind of slowly moved in sort of a half moon shape around my campsite, and it just kind of disappeared. I filmed that, and that's about it. Back here in Indiana, just a while ago, when I went to Rochester, Indiana, to go visit my great grandmother when she was still alive, my mother and I both, on the way back, saw with our own two eyes, just for a split second, a UFO. And that's it. That's my total, UFO experience of what I've seen with my own two eyes. And then, then there's the films, which are just, like I said, dozens and dozens of them on film. It's for me, it's...
All right, now, you were filming them, right? I mean, you saw them when you filmed them, right?
No, sir. That's the whole thing about all of this. It's so very, very, very strange. When I went up there to Coyote Summit and began filming, there's times up there, which you can see right in the film, where I'm filming in the complete opposite directions, zooming in on these UFOs, sometimes zooming in on an area where there's not a UFO right before it takes off from ground level and following it up in the air. These things are, I'm no engineer, but I do have some friends in MUFON with engineering background that have looked at this and said that these things are going 5,000 miles an hour. And that's what is so very strange. When you watch the film, it's just bang, bang, bang. It's not just like they're there. They happen to be there, and I'm filming them. I turn and zoom in on these things. I pan in and out in accordance to what's about to happen. And it appears to anybody who's watching the whole film that I did it all, that whoever was behind the camera did it all on purpose and knew exactly what they were doing, and that's not the case. I've said from day one that, as a matter of fact, the last little bit of film that I shot there was me in front of the little alien and Rachel saying on camera, well, if I came out here, and at least I proved to myself that there aren't any UFOs in Area 51. Which is hysterical to me now, because at the time that I left Rachel, I didn't realize that I had the experience that I had. It wasn't, and it all unfolded as it went, after I found the first couple of UFOs on the film.
So, all right. So yeah. You didn't notice them with the naked eye.
No, not at all, which makes it, like I said, it makes it that much more paranormal, because there's no way you could film these things on purpose at the speeds they're doing. The way that I did it. It's just very strange.
You've had a couple of years now to think about all of this, and obviously you've done a lot of thinking about it. If anybody takes a look at your website, they can see that there's been a lot of work that went into it.
Yes.
As you began to realize what you had on video, and you begin to see these things on video, how did that impact you? Because, I mean, your conscious memory was there was nothing there, and then when you looked at the video, it was there.
Right. Well,
how did that impact you?
Okay. I've been through the whole nine yards on this. When I was in my apartment on that Saturday and I found my first UFO, I'd have to compare my reaction to that of a kid, probably, I got up off my couch, started running around yelling. I couldn't believe it, the first one I found was just obvious that it sure wasn't a plane or a helicopter. This thing is just unprecedented, So I went from that to once I got back out on my ship, shortly after that I had to get back out on the boat and started. My plan was to continue to look through the daytime footage because I was having such good luck, discovering these UFOs. So I kept on with that. The evening of my 36th birthday, though, is when things really took a turn for me. I just had a knowing, is the way I put it. I don't hear voices in my head or anything crazy like that. I just know. And so I had this feeling, and I something told me to just watch this video. It was a nighttime video from my campsite. So I did. That's when I discovered, that I paused it. I didn't know why. I discovered that I'm talking to somebody in the truck with me when I was out there by myself. And then I, the first thing that I did in my own head the evening that I was out there was, well, I just must have fell asleep. Well, the thing of it was, it doesn't make any sense about that is, I wouldn't call myself you know, I'm a fairly brave person, but I wasn't calm when I was out there at nighttime. I wasn't in the frame of mind where I would just doze off and fall asleep. But these are the kind of things your mind does for you, you know, makes up excuses for you. And it was at that very moment on my ship when I'm watching this nighttime video that I realized that something had happened to me. And like I said, it kind of took a turn then. I've been, you know, from jumping around in my apartment like a little kid all the way to extremely depressed about this and everything, every kind of feeling you can imagine about it. What comes and takes you away at night, does what it wants to with you, erases your memory and then puts you back. What does that? Is that God? You know, I don't think so. That's my opinion. I don't think so. And this is happening to millions of people.
Have you considered doing a hypnotic hypnosis regression?
Yeah, we talked about that for a second. Yeah, I'm all for that, absolutely. Right now, the position I'm in is I'm really and hoping that these interviews that I'm doing will help promote that. I'm just looking for someone who has the technical means, first of all, to do a good job, but I want to get this, you know, off the landing strip here. I want to get it up in the air and get some type of documentation going, and certainly some type of therapy like that, regressive hypnosis or whatever can be done to try to bring this story full circle and understand more about what's happened to me.
You mentioned Dr. Lear earlier. Have you contacted him with your story?
I did. I wrote him an email, and I'm learning as I go here, Kevin. You know, this is a doctor. I probably should have been more just straightforward and just talk about just I probably included too much of my personal experience in this. And, you know, I had in my mind, well, this is a doctor that's taking alien implants out of his patients. So he's probably, you know, I'm sure he is an open-minded fellow. But long story short, when I emailed him, he sent me back a real polite email and told me that I should probably look into speaking with some people in MUFON or whatever, and you know, which I'm already well past that stage. I just think I probably said too much to him, to be honest with you, in the email. From what I've understood, as far as these implants go, he's had a lot of luck removing these things from people who have them in their arms and their legs and what have you. But from what I understand, it's been attempted to remove these from like where mine is in my head, and without very good luck. And it's something that he probably wouldn't attempt anyhow to remove it. And I'm not necessarily looking to remove it as much as I am just to prove that it's something there underneath that bone.
How big is it?
Not very big at all. Probably about the size of a head of an eraser, but not that, probably maybe 2 millimeters above the skin, but the diameter of the head of an eraser, roughly, something like that. The thing of it is, I have no other bumps back there. I'm not prone to that type of thing, and if it was just some type of blemish, I'm sure it wouldn't be there for the last 2 years. You know, it hasn't moved, and it's, I have no doubt what it is in my mind. You know, it's hard to convince anybody else, but it's really not in the business I'm in anyhow. I'm not trying to convince anybody of anything. I'm just trying to tell my story.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I said, you've had 2 years to think about this. You say you've been through the whole gamut of thoughts and emotions on this. Where are you now?
Yeah, I'm probably in a lot of ways just as unsure as everybody else about this time that we live in. I've concluded, though, that there's so much negativity going on right now that really the only way for, I'm not talking about just myself either, because I think this is bigger than me, and I'm basically trying to handle this where I don't worry about me too much and try to focus in on this time we live in, on how what happened to me is impacting everybody else. You know, is it happening to more, and I definitely believe it is happening to a lot of people. And I feel that all of this is, for me, the closest thing I've come to as far as finding anything to read about the time that we live in is the revelation of Jesus Christ. And I've said many times before that I'm not a religious person or a theologist or anything like that, but I really believe that that's the time that we live in. And from my own research, well beyond UFOs, but also into, you know, we won't bring up politics here on your show, but into politics, what's going on, and just many, many facets of this time we live in and how it all correlates together, I've concluded that if something from outside, something greater than human beings, something greater than us is going to be needed to save us from this place we live in, this reality that has been created for us, and definitely a false reality that we live in.
So is it your assessment then that, and we've only got 30 seconds, I really should just hold this until we come back from the break,
sure,
because I don't think that you'll be able to answer it in the few seconds that we have.
All right, folks, we're talking with John Mitchell. He is a merchant marine, and he is someone who went out to Area 51 just curious and got more than he bargained for out there. We'll continue talking with him when we come back on the other side of this break.
Did you know The Kevin Smith Show selects one of its very best shows each week and turns it into a free podcast? Well, it's true. You can download free Kevin Smith Show podcasts right now and get a free fresh podcast each week. Do you want to start building your own library of Kevin Smith Shows? All you have to do is visit our website at kevinsmithshow.com and click the free podcast link. They're yours for the download.
We're talking with John Mitchell. John is a merchant mariner, and he is someone who a couple of years ago went out to Area 51, or to a place near Area 51, just sort of to see what he could see, and got more than he bargained for. During that commercial break, I thought of a different question, a little different direction I want to go. You didn't expect what you got.
No, not at all. Like I said, you know, my whole reason for going out during the Red Flag Week was to actually do something with my time while I was out there, and, you know, it seemed a whole lot more tangible to me at the time than the idea of UFOs did. You know, it's a question that's still on my mind of why did I go out there? Because I, you know, I had paranormal experiences right before I left, and even on the way there, you know, it's just mind blowing for sure.
All right, now how far this Coyote Point? How far is that from Area 51?
Yeah, Coyote Summit is roughly 25 miles or so from where the center of the base should be on the other side of the mountain range.
Can you see it from there?
Oh, you can see the mountain range that Area 51 hides behind, but I believe that they've, since they've repurchased more land or taken over more land for the base, that there's only one peak left now that you can actually go to, which is quite a traverse to get up there, and then you're still looking at a base that's 30-something miles away from the peak, so you have to have telescopic lenses to even, you know, which is beyond anything that I'd even care to do, because who cares if you can take photographs of the surface of the base of Area 51? I don't think there's much going on the top side over there. I'm sure all their activity that one would be interested in is probably underground.
All right. Now, looking back on what has happened to you since you went out there, would you recommend, and this is the question, would you recommend this as an outing for others, or would you recommend that people stay away from there?
Yeah, I'd recommend to stay away from there unless you, you know, it's each his own. It depends on, you know, if you're mature enough to consider everything and all the possibilities and you decide you still want to go there, then to each his own. I won't say that I wouldn't actually have been there. I went there again in 07 and filmed a little bit, which, before you ask, no, I haven't even had time to go through those films yet. It's something I need to get on top of. But
do you think
I definitely
these,
won't be going camping out in the middle of the desert anymore, ever again.
Well, if you decide you want to go camping in the desert, let me recommend the desert around Phoenix. It's like Mars with cactus on it.
Right. I lived in Arizona, actually.
Yeah? Where did you live in Arizona?
A little town called Green Valley, just outside of Tucson. I was out there for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know that summertime is like living in North Hell out here.
Yes.
It is hot. But, you know, about 6 months out of the year, the weather makes this a paradise.
Absolutely.
If you can stand that summer, it's worth the other 6 months. But, all right, now, you said you really wouldn't recommend that for most folks.
Absolutely not.
But let me ask the next logical question. Have you determined these UFOs that you saw and that you videotaped, have you determined in your own mind whether you think they are extraterrestrial or are they terrestrial high technology?
Yeah, you know, there's a gentleman, I know you're extremely familiar with, John Lear.
Yeah.
And I've heard a couple of his interviews, and he likes to say that, you know, somewhere around 80 or 90% of UFO sightings are, if they're not alien, they're human alien technology, or just straight up our own human people flying these things. And I would say that he's close, but I would say probably more like 50-50. I think that a lot of the stuff that I filmed, the disc aircraft, could very well be, you know, have human hands in on the design of them or the building of them, considering the location I filmed them at. However, there's a lot of paranormal activity that I filmed during my trip that's absolutely not human. There's entities that I've filmed that's the best way I could describe them, is just small living creatures that can evidently take off from ground level and go straight up into the air. Like no bird, definitely not a bird. And considering the ones that I filmed were a considerable distance from the camera, it doesn't make any sense that they could be called a bug either, because they'd have to be the world's largest bug. Just, you know, really strange things like that.
Well, why do you say that they are entities? What makes you say that?
Because when you look at them, they're just not, you know, they're too small. They're just not structured craft. It's not like there's a few smaller UFOs that people have filmed out in England, you know, like little balls of light taking off and moving erratically. These look like living creatures. There's one in particular, and it has a little story attached to it. When I was actually driving to Rachel on the 13th, the reason why I can remember this happening and put the two things together is because as I was filming, I had seen my very first sign ever in my life of beware low-flying aircraft, which are dotted all over out in the desert in Nevada because of all the test flying that they do out there. So as soon as I seen my first that first sign, I of course remembered that I saw it. It was shortly right after that I had this immense deja vu, just really, really strong, and strong enough for me to remember to talk about it right now. You know, it's just really weird. And sure enough, when I get home and started looking through the film, right on the film, right after I pass that sign, there's an entity that comes in from the right side and lands right at the roadside just as my car is passing, and all this timing was all together. The deja vu, just after I film going past the sign, and then lo and behold, I find out there's an entity roadside that came basically right at the truck and landed roadside. And that particular clip can be found on my website as well of that entity. And
what do they look like?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to describe. It's basically looks like some type of, there's no real shape to it. It seems like they shape-shift. This one that I just talked about kind of shape-shifts as it's flying through the sky, and then as it comes down at roughly like a 30-degree angle down to the ground, it shape-shifts again. So to say that it has a form is, you know, I can't tell you. It's just a black thing that changes its shape as it flies through the air.
Are you familiar with Jeff Woolline?
Jeff Woolline. That doesn't ring a bell, no.
Jeff Woolline has been a guest here on the show several times, and he lives here in Phoenix.
Okay.
If you lived in Arizona, you most likely have heard of South Mountain in Phoenix.
Yeah.
Jeff has videotaped the very type of thing that you are talking about. He's got miles of footage of these entities. He calls them entities as well.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things is that there are petroglyphs all over South Mountain left from ancient inhabitants.
Uh-huh.
Many of those petroglyphs are the shapes of these entities that he videotapes in the sky.
Sure.
And it might be worth it to link up with Jeff and just see what he's got on this, because he takes a lot of criticism from two guys in particular. But the fact is that he takes the criticism because, you know, they don't buy the idea that it's entities.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but he takes that criticism and rolls with it, and he says, well, you know, hey, if you got a doubt, come up on the mountain with me and look for yourself.
Exactly, and yeah, I've run across that myself. As a matter of fact, it's been very interesting being on a ship, in that the ship is kind of its own little biosphere, you know, and it's been an interesting sociological experiment for me to see how people will react to this. And I've had everything from, wow, I see it too, and show me more, to the other side, which is they're absolutely not real. And then when I try to ask the same person who says they're absolutely not real to look at 1 minute of a video, they'll have nothing to do with it because they don't want to know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't knock people for that. Everybody, you know, can take this or leave it, get involved or not get involved as they see fit. I definitely don't. But it's a different ball game if someone's going to you know, be a skeptic or actually criticize you on something, then I think they should be armed with a little a little knowledge in that case.
Well, yeah. A skeptic looks at information and then says, I don't buy it.
Right.
Someone who won't look at the information and still says, oh, it's nonsense, that's just a loudmouth ignoramus.
Right.
All right, we have to take a break. When we come back from this break, we'll continue and talking with John Mitchell. And we will open the telephone lines for you to call with your questions. Maybe you've seen some of the same stuff. Questions, comments, whatever, at 1-800-289-1092 on the other side of this break. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
I'll be there in the morning light.
Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
And we are back. For those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. My guest is John Mitchell.
a man who a couple of years ago went out to a place near Area 51 and came back with some really amazing video and some life-changing experiences he did not count on. John, let's go straight to the phone line.
Okay.
And, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kev. Yes, this is Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Yes, Kevin.
How are you doing?
Outstanding, sir.
And, John.
Yes.
Okay, you have videotaped a lot of UFOs in, out of Area 51. My question is, have your cameras ever videotaped the occupants of those UFOs?
No, sir. No. When you go through my website and look at the video, the majority of them are at a distance, which I think is a good thing in a way. I mean, you're not going to get. I don't have any videos to answer your question of showing the occupants. Right. Yeah, I do have on the very front page of my website the UFO that came over the top of my truck when I turned my camera back on. If you take a really close look at that photograph, if you have a good computer and are able to look at the photographs real close, I believe that that photograph contains an actual interdimensional being, in that you can see a face, a head with eyes, and two arms interfering in the picture, interfering with the object itself. If you take
all
a
right,
close
I'll take
look.
A look at it. Thank you very much, and I'll talk to you soon, Kev.
All right. Thank you for the call. 1-800-289-1092 is the toll-free number, and it is toll-free throughout North America. So that means anywhere in the United States or Canada, that's toll-free. If you are outside of North America, the number does work, but it isn't toll-free. However, you can send me, if you're outside of North America, you can send an email with your question or comment. If you send it to Flash, F-L-A-S-H, Flash, at KevinSmithShow.com. And I'll read it, and we'll ask John to comment on it, all right? So that's Flash at KevinSmithShow.com. John, I'm looking at this this photograph, and perhaps on your website, perhaps I am looking at... maybe the wrong one. The one I'm looking at, I don't see a face. But
right, yeah, you have to look really close at it. What it is, if you're looking at the right one, it's several stills that I put together to show how this thing came down over the top of the truck and changes shape. Is the one you're looking at kind of look like a mushroom-shaped UFO?
No, I'm looking actually at the at an image that's right dead center of your page as you scroll down. It's the first image that comes up.
Right. It says UFO leaving my campsite.
Okay.
Yeah, that one. That's the one I'm talking about. The center UFO. It's all the same one, but the center shot of it, where it looks most clear. It's actually about halfway up the. If you're looking at this as a mushroom shape, it's about halfway up the stem of that thing, and you really have to save the picture and, like I said, have decent optics to look at. And you're going to have to blow it up to be able to actually see it.
Okay.
It's not something you can just see with the naked eye necessarily, but it's in there.
Yeah, and I see what you mean about it being mushroom shaped. And
right.
and describe again what it is. I will see if I run this through an optics program.
As you're looking at just with the naked eye right now, there's actually five shots of this thing changing shape. The very center one, which is the most clear one, if you start at the base where it almost looks like some kind of an exhaust where it's a little bit whiter, kind of exhaust coming out of the bottom of the stem of this thing,
mm-hmm.
right where it turns white, right there, if you key in on that area, you'll see two arms that come down and a face and two eyes right there. And it actually, the head of this thing actually interferes with the stem part of the UFO. But like I said, you have to blow it up and look real careful. And am I saying definitely that's what that is? You know, I'm not saying definitely that's what any of this is. It's up to every individual to, think what they want to think about it and see what they want to see. But
now, is this, as I look at this this shot, is this object flying down and away from you?
No, I'm filming out of the passenger side of the truck, and it's a little bit, it came from directly over the top of the truck and a little bit behind it, and then sort of down at an angle, and I'm imagining, you know, just almost perpendicular with me, you know, filming out the side of the window as soon as it comes down into frame.
Okay, but then it's flying toward the front of the truck.
It's actually flying a little bit, sort of at an angle away from the truck, like probably about, I don't know, about a 45-degree angle going the same direction the truck's pointing, but out to the right-hand side of it away from me.
Okay, so this...
The reason why I left this on still shot like this is when you watch the video, it's so quick, you almost can't even make... you definitely can't make it out unless you watch it in slow motion. It's just a flash, but when you... look at it close, like I've done with all of this stuff. It's definitely, it's not a bat.
Yeah, it's not that. Well, the reason I ask is it appears to have at least one and maybe two dark areas in the rear of the UFO,
mm-hmm.
And then this mist or something trailing behind it, like you said, maybe like exhaust.
Yeah, it does. It looks like, almost like some kind of propulsion system. Yeah, it's really strange. It's like no other UFO I've ever encountered in my research since I've done this. If you want to see something else really strange, you can go to the Big Brother page, and you'll see some links on there. Off to the right-hand side, by halfway down the page, you'll see the word in purple, Worlds. If you click on that link, you'll see two photographs that are actually of myself. And that's something extremely paranormal that's been going on with me more recently, is my own catching photographs of my eyes shape-shifting. The irises in my eyes shape-shifting has been the most recent really, really super strange thing that's been happening to me. I brought up this photograph, these two photographs in particular, because of the way they were taken, which is very fortunate for me. If we have time for this story, what had happened to begin with was I began to be friends with a gentleman, Tony Jackson, and he runs a website called freedomvideo.org, which I encourage everybody to go visit. It's a great site with a lot of good information. And upon getting to know him a little bit better, he had sent me a photograph of him and his staff, and so I didn't have any photographs of myself. I took a digital camera and took four shots, and just real quickly picked the one I liked and sent it to him, deleted the other three, and then it was several days later we discovered that, sure enough, there was a shape-shifting event that happened in that picture, where not only did my eye change to where you can, my iris changes to number 7, and I know how extremely strange all this sounds, but yet the proof is there. And my medallion shape shifts as well in the photograph. There's an article on Freedom Video. If you go to freedomvideo.org, on the front page, you'll see on the left-hand column a place that says Interview with Area 51, or Area 51, the interview is what it's called. And you click on that, and it'll explain everything about that picture. Now, after I had taken that photo, it's just so prominent, the number 7, and it just kept stuck in the back of my mind. I was like, should I even be doing this article and putting this out here for people? I mean, it's just so off the wall. I don't want the people who could believe that my UFO videos are real see this and think whatever they're going to think, you know? So I was a little apprehensive about it all. I get back on my ship after my vacation, and I just, this time, what's different about these photographs is it didn't just happen. I decided to try to make it happen, to try to make the shape-shifting event occur. Now, I have a Motorola cell phone that doesn't take a one of those small little memory chips. It just has its own memory in the phone. I took those two photographs that you see linked there on the Worlds page, or the Big Brother page linked to Worlds. I took those two shots, and you can clearly see that my irises in both of the individual pictures have shifted into the number 7. The thing about all this, why I'm glad that these two particular pictures came about, is that I've already said there was no memory card in it. I can go back and pull up my Verizon records to show that it wasn't until after I took this photograph and came back home to try to get it off of the phone that I actually turned on the capability of sending and receiving photographs. I didn't even have that capability on the phone when the picture was taken. So I think it gives me a lot of credibility as far as being able to prove that the photographs themselves are genuine.
And, all right, let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. This is Gary from New York.
Yes, Gary.
Good evening, John.
Hi, Gary. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you. I've got two questions for you. The first one is, you have more questions now than when you started this trek or journey of yours. And the second question is, how did your friends and or family and peers react when you told them your story?
Okay, those are great questions. The first one, yes, absolutely. Definitely, once now that I'm into this eyeballs deep, so to speak, I do have more and more questions as I go, and it's definitely a learning experience as I go. The second question is that as far as my family goes, I'm very blessed. I have a family that's just awesome, extremely supportive, and they know me, you know, as any family would. They know that that this is real, that this is happening to me. They believe me, which means, you know, when anybody, not just myself, but when anybody goes through something this traumatic, there's no saying how important that is to have some kind of support network. And my family have been here for me 100% from the beginning, every single one of them. As far as friends go, the way a ship works and being in the Merchant Marines, you know, these fellas, you have a few friends, very few, that shipmates that you get real close with and become good friends. As far as those kind of guys are concerned, they're still my buddies and everything's just the same as it always was. You know, the other guys, you know, it's hit or miss, you know, and I don't really worry about their opinion too much, but I've gotten a little bit of flack on the boat, but nothing to worry about too much.
All right, let me give the telephone number again, 1-800-289-1092. It's toll-free throughout North America. And I have a question about the shape-shifting eyes.
Okay.
Have you had a situation where other people have seen it happen, not just the photographs, but have seen it happen in your eyes?
Yeah, one time, my now ex-girlfriend, yeah, she was with me, trying to remember, we were at Circuit City, I was getting my speaker wire had fallen off my speaker in my truck, and I was just going there to get it repaired, and I went in there to pay the guy, and my girlfriend, I won't mention her name, my ex-girlfriend, at the time, she was standing right next to me and just turned white as a ghost, and when I asked her, you know, if she was okay or what was going on, she told me that she had seen that she had seen my eye change shape. So yeah, that's the only.
Does your vision change when that happens?
No, not at all.
So you don't notice it happening?
No, I guess after the last two photographs that I'm showing you now on the Big Brother page, I willed that to happen. I wanted that to happen. So it was a conscious effort. But I didn't feel anything, you know, a physiological change or anything like that. Other than spiritually, I guess, or on a more spiritual level, I felt something there, you know, more in tune. I made the remark when I was talking to another friend of mine that I felt that when what I said when I held the camera up to my face to take those two shots was I said, I don't even know, I might have even said it out loud. I said, show me. Like it's something else that it's a part of me that's doing this, you know, and so that's what I said. And sure enough, I got the photograph. And just one more thing on top of that is that there's actually now a fourth photograph. When I did my last interview, I was down in Miami, Florida, with some actually with my new friend here, Tony Jackson. I just mentioned him and his wife were there, and we got together for New Year's and for this interview. We went to Homestead, Florida one day and toured Coral Castle, which is a very interesting place. And while we were out there, one of the shots that he took on his camera of me sitting next to his wife And it was another moment where I was, you know, I'll confess I was definitely trying to make something happen in that particular photo. And so now we have a fourth photo with my eyes shifting shape in that one as well. And that, like I said, that was taken with his camera, you know, in the, with the three of us walking around this coral castle.
All right, let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Well, thank you. This is Dean. I'm an independent researcher. I was really interested in John's website. It's really nice. What I wanted to comment on to him, I can see those objects perfectly well. I don't have any clue what they are, but what I do know is that they're going much faster. They're going, they're flying much faster than any technology that I know of on this earth. You know, I've showed those to a couple of people. They can't see them because they're going so fast. So, you know, I just wanted to ask, you got any idea at all what they are?
Sure. Thanks, Dean, for the question. Yeah, like I said, I've filmed, you know, some of them are very obviously structured, to me anyhow, very obviously structured craft, your typical disc aircraft. You can see this thing taking off, wobbling. You know, it's not like it's a solid object or a solid disc shape that wobbles. It's not changing form. But then, on the other hand, some of my videos are more along the lines of Trevor James Constable. They're more like, if anyone's familiar with him, they're more like an energy mass, dark energy, and once again, I've never from the beginning of this tried to pretend like I know what these things are. I'm just grateful that I've been able to film them. But I think I've filmed just about everything, the whole gamut there from, you know, some type of entity. I believe they're intelligent. That's just an opinion. All the way to these flying disc craft. And I agree, they're, the majority, if you were to actually look at the entire 20-minute-plus Coyote Summit video, the average person would probably be hard-pressed to see even one UFO in that, save the very last one where the disc takes straight off. It's pretty obvious, even in regular speed. But when you look at all the other ones, you cannot see them with the naked eye. You have to view it in slow motion. And when you view it in slow motion, you'll see a quick streak. And then you have to go, once you find that streak, you have to go frame by frame to actually see this thing.
Yeah, I think somebody with an untrained eye would have trouble seeing them, because I've showed them to people, you know, but, I mean, I look for things like this, so I know what to look for. I'm having a little trouble with video four, but I guarantee you those things are more than hypersonic, and hypersonic is not even a technology that exists.
Right,
so unless
yeah.
it be that rumored aurora, you know, which we don't even know if that exists, but if it does, it's only 3,500 miles an hour. These objects I'm seeing in your video are going much faster than any rumored technology that I've ever heard
right.
of. So.
Yeah, right. What I've been told by a couple fellows in MUFON is that with our current physics and mainstream science, which a lot of people nowadays are beginning to wake up to that that's just, you know, fraudulent to begin with. But mainstream science physics would say that these things going this fast would tear themselves apart.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be able to do it. So,
Dean, thank you so much for the call. Let's go to a flash message from Italy. This is from Angelo, and it says, I am looking at the Choose page on your website, John, and see the skimming black object going along the desert floor on the pop-up picture.
Right.
Question is, are you meditating in the desert to bring this sort of response on? Is that you sitting there? And what are your thoughts on this particular episode?
Yes, absolutely. What that's actually from, we didn't get that far, but one of the things I did after I came back from Area 51 and began this strange little trip is to go out. There's a dock that we go to. It's called Port Inland. It's our stone dock. The nearest town in Michigan to that, to find it on a map, is called Manistique. It's way up at the top of Lake Michigan. The nice thing about that dock is that you can walk down the beach and go around the corner, and it's a nice little secluded area. So I went back there with my camera. The idea was, okay, is this happening because of me? This basically your question, or was it because I was in Area 51? And I have approximately 22 of the mini DV tapes for my little handy cam now, and all 22 of them have entities on them. I have been able to, since this has happened, and go out there, I've been able to, yeah, it is a meditation. It's some type of a spiritual connection, but I can actually encourage these entities to engage with me in these videos. So, yeah, that is me, to answer the question. That is me on that page kneeling there in the center. And, yes, I was attempting to manifest these rod entities into that video. It was a purposeful try, and it turned out to pretty well.
So, all right, now the rod entities are interesting. Jose Escamilla has done quite a bit of work on rods, shot a lot of film, and he's been on this show several times. We've discussed them. What do you think? Are these rods intelligent entities?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Interestingly enough, if you go, what I've tried to do throughout all this, because I have such a vast amount of footage, is not put it all just in one place. If you go to the Freedom Video, to the freedomvideo.org, to the the article that I did for Tony there, I also made an exclusive video for him where I included some of these things. And you can tell from I have shots where I zoom in and these things crisscross each other right in front of the camera, and I know that there's an interaction there. I can feel it. I know that even though I cannot physically see these things with my eyes, I know that I'm doing this on purpose and that there's this connection there. It's as if they're working with me. And so absolutely, beyond a shadow of a doubt, these things are absolutely intelligent. Now, what are they? Well, you know, your guess is as good as mine.
You know, the last time I had Jose Escamilla on the show, he told us that there was a guy allegedly in I think he said Japan or maybe China that had actually caught one of these rods, maybe he thinks maybe in a net, and he says that the story is that if you touch them, they're very poisonous. And so, you know, what do you think, extraterrestrial or terrestrial in origin?
Terrestrial in origin, like a lot of things that are being called extraterrestrial. Terrestrial in origin, and, you know, I'm not going to make a judgment on this interview, but I have a hard time believing that someone could catch one of these things, because I don't believe
well,
it's completely physical.
Yeah, he was not sure about it either. He had heard about that. And he said he was trying to trace it down and find out. But of course, anything that's strange and unexplained is going to get a lot of myth and a lot of legend told around it.
Sure.
And the rods certainly have. Do you find them to be the rods? Do you find them to be plentiful, or are they rare?
Oh no! I have, like I said, out of those 22 tapes, I have them. Sometimes on a lucky shoot, when I'd go out there, I'll have a couple dozen of them on one tape. So they're here. Probably there's probably more of them than there are us.
What? Where do you go to film these to see them?
Yeah, that's the dock over there at Port Inland. The closest town is called Manistique, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And it's in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan at the top of Lake Michigan. It's just one of the docks that my ship goes to up there.
All right, now, have you seen rods, have you filmed rods at any other location?
Yeah, there's a couple rods a couple, like I said, some other energy type entities like that also present on the Area 51 video as well. But these are the only two locations that I've actually, you know, gone out by myself. Area 51 and Michigan are the only two places I've gone out, set up camera, and purposely tried to film these things. Outside of that, it's been photography of these shape-shifting events that's, you know, the most recent thing that I've been doing.
All right, we're just a couple of minutes away from our next break. The shape-shifting events I want to get into. What are we talking about with shape-shifting? What is shape-shifting? I mean, what are the objects that are shape-shifting?
Right. Well, in the very first photograph that I mentioned to you there, when I took the photo to send to Tony at Freedom Video, I wear a medallion of... the Mayan calendar 24/7 around my neck. I have, for whatever reason, I've done that since I got back from Area 51 2 years ago. I don't take it off. And that actually, in the photograph, and it really pays to go to read the interview because it's explained in detail there. The medallion itself, in the photograph, it's a round silver medallion, but in the photograph I took, it takes the shape of, you're familiar with the STS videos that NASA has shot a while ago. It actually takes the shape of that with a notch out of the front of it. And then, like I said, my eye also shifts shape into the, where you can see a very prominent number 7 in the eye. And I believe that that's what all of this is about for me, with the kind of contact that I'm having and where it's coming from. I believe that it has a lot to do with these so-called UFOs that are being filmed outside of our atmosphere.
All right. We have to take a break. When we come back from this break, what we are going to do is continue talking with John Mitchell. And the telephone lines are open for you if you have a question or a comment. I encourage you to go over to his website, take a look at it, and see what you think. The link is on my page. We'll be back on the other side of this break.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
Welcome back. John, when we cut away for break, you were saying about the medallion shape-shifting, and you were talking also just previous to that about your eyes doing this shape-shifting. Now, you've got to realize that eyes shape-shifting is not normal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you... I would assume that you relate the shape-shifting of your eyes to the missing time that you had when you were out at Area 51.
In a way, I believe, Kevin, I believe that what I'm going through, what's happening to me, is all for a reason, that, and I believe that I've been prepared for this my whole life. I don't think that this is, although I felt that my life was, if not normal, it was, you know, just about the same types of things that everybody else was going through before this happened. But now I'm coming to realize that here's the thing, you know, what are the odds that I would go, that anybody, not just me, that anybody could go out and film all these things, unprecedented in the sheer number anyhow, the volume of them, if not the photography itself, and then, you know, do that, have these other shape-shifting events, film things in multiple places, and reveal these things, and on top of that, be able to get on the radio show with people such as yourself and discuss this. You know, it's just there's too many things that line up to show me that I'm doing exactly what I was meant to do. And it goes beyond UFOs. I was going to bring up the gentleman talked about that the one particular GIF image that I have on there where I'm trying to concentrate on bringing a rod entity to interact with me. When you click on that to begin with, it's on the Big Brother page, choose. When you click on the number one on the Big Brother page, it brings up the link that takes you to that particular GIF image I was just describing. And what that link actually is a gentleman named Levy a long time ago made a plate called Baphomet, which is all tied into Satanism and the satanic. One of the extremely strange things that's happened to me, and the reason why Baphomet is actually on the website at that link, I inverted the Baphomet plate of Levy's to the negative and also inverted it upside down, and you can see that link on the page there. Very strange thing about that is when you look at, as you're looking at it as it is on my page upside down, as you're looking at the top right, what would be the leg of Baphomet, the knee area, there are five clearly visible eyes present there. And they're only present when you do the negative inversion of the original Levy plate. I've researched for nearly 2 years now, and there's nothing. I'll go on radio saying that there's nothing, not one word anywhere that I could find describing these eyes. So as far as I'm aware, one of the many facets of this experience of mine has been to discover these eyes on the Levy plate of Baphomet. And as far as I know, I'm the only individual that's ever discovered them. And so there's...
What do you think they mean?
Well, when you look at the eyes, there's apparently like a normal, regular sort of eye, and then there's some eyes that look like they have slits in them. And I just think it speaks to... they're hidden eyes is what they physically are on the plate, so I think it speaks to many of the hidden mysteries on this earth, you know, that maybe certain people in the cabals are more aware of than the average Joe on the street.
What do you think was done to you that makes it possible for your eyes to shapeshift?
Yeah, I just think, as I explained on my last interview, when you go to my website, too, you can find an interview page there so you can listen to everything I've done. I explained that I believe because of this tangible physical evidence that I have. It's not a belief that I'm deriving out of, conjuring out of thin air. It's because these things are happening to me. I believe that my body is just genetically different from the average person. And not just my body, but my mind as well. As I said before, I would assume that just your normal average person, if they went through everything I'm going through, that they wouldn't make it. It's extremely stressful having this knowledge, and I'm saying that being aware that there's, you know, lots of people who claim to be abductees and multiple times they've been abducted and all of that. But to go through what I'm going through and these shape-shifting events and my physical body doing what it's doing, I really think that that would be enough stress to make a person, just an average Joe off the street, you know, crack up under the stress. So So I think there's a lot of aspects of me as an individual that is just geared for this to happen to me.
Do you think there is a connection between this implant, that this thing that's at the back of your neck? Do you think there's a connection between that and the shape-shifting?
I don't know. It's because the shape-shifting is such a physiological, genetic thing. Having one object put inside your body, I don't know if it could do that or not, if that's even...
Well, did you ever shape-shift before going to Area 51?
Not that I'm aware of, no. This is something that's a progressive thing for sure, and it seems to be gaining momentum for me. It would appear that just about every time I pick up a camera or a video camera that I'm shooting UFOs, you know. It's just some type of unfelt, sometimes unfelt. I shouldn't maybe say unfelt. It's an unseen connection for sure. I definitely feel kind of in harmony with the moment when I am filming these things, so I can't say it's not a felt thing, but it's not the connection is not a tangible connection, you know. I didn't receive an instruction book in the mail on how to do all this stuff. It just seems to be happening, you know.
Well, it would seem anyway. I certainly there's no way to make a concrete connection here, but it would seem that if there was no shape shifting prior to your going to the area near Area 51, mm-hmm. Where you experienced this missing time and the videos of all these UFOs.
Right.
No shape shifting before that, and now there is. It would seem that there must be a connection, and that something must have happened during that missing time that makes the shape shifting even possible. But then the next question is, so why? What does it do?
Yeah, you know, I hear what you're saying, but because of the amount of paranormal activity I've had in my life, I haven't had the shape shifting in particular, you know, prior to this, but I've always had sort of a paranormal life. I've always had a real strong spiritual connection, and just different paranormal events have happened in my life, not along the lines of UFOs or aliens or that type of thing, but contact with people in my family who have died, and not seeing ghosts, but having sort of ghostly or spiritual encounters is something that's been fairly regular and just a normal part of my life. So, you know, like I have to go back to say that in my own heart, I believe that the implant itself probably isn't. It's more of a, you know, whatever I am, whatever has happened to me, I think happened, you know, from the beginning, and that this was always known, probably somewhere along the line that this would happen to me.
So you think that perhaps you are genetically altered from the beginning?
Yeah, I do. You know, there's things, now I'm going to say something that any doctor that's listening on the phone or any pediatrician is going to roll his eyes, but there's things that we've come to take for granted as just, okay, it's normal. Like everybody's heard that, you know, or seen with their own children, that eyes can turn color, hair can fall out, new hair can grow back in, and all these genetic things that happen, and we just, because they happen, they're so prevalent, we call them normal aspects of a child growing up. In my case, I have a photograph of me where I was, I don't know my exact age at the time, but I was old enough to sit up on my own. I was looks like I was probably a toddler at the time, you know, able to get around on my own a little bit. And I have very, very dark eyes, very dark brown eyes, and jet black hair. Now, shortly after that photograph was taken, my hair fell out, blonde hair grew in, and my eyes changed from deep dark brown to the deep blue that they are right now. And like I said, you know, pediatrician, physicians will take that for granted and say, well, it's nothing. You know, it happens to a lot of people. I don't buy that, though. I think that there's something else going on. And there's, you know, it's just part of the many, many, many lies and things that we're not aware of because they've been kept from us, what's really going on here.
So what do you think the purpose of the shape-shifting of the eyes? Why does it happen?
Okay, I'm beginning to make this connection with what's happening to me. I think there's two different things going on with me. like I said, I've always had this spiritual understanding and connection and been able to do things that aren't common for people to be able to do. And before all of this, then I go out to Area 51 and have this experience and this implant put in. And I consider them two different things. I believe that every human being or human soul here is created by God, or whatever anybody who's listening, whatever their interpretation is of God. I don't, try to judge people on that. But I think what is going on out in Area 51 is very evil. Now, if myself going out there and having this happen to me, and then now showing these what I consider signs of these number sevens in my eyes, my own research is telling me that the number seven is, at least from the Christian Bible, the number seven is the number of God. And I'm not sitting here trying to say that, you know, that I'm a prophet or that, you know, anything, any grandiose claim like that. I'm not trying to say that. I'm just saying that that's what I relate it to. The number seven, I relate it to the number of God, and here it is, it's showing up in my eye in the shapeshift. So am I here, is my purpose to show people that these, what I consider dark things are going on, and that maybe these signs that are in my eyes are God's blessing that I'm doing this, or, you know, these are the questions that I ask myself, Kevin.
All right, we have to take a break, and we'll continue more with John Mitchell when we come back on the other side of this break, and with your comments or questions at 1-800-289-1092.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
are back, and we're on Final Approach now as we head toward the end of the show. We're talking with John Mitchell. John, before the break, you said that you consider the things going on out at Area 51 as evil.
Mm-hmm. I do, in general, yeah. If you want me to expound upon that.
Yeah, what is it that's evil out there?
Well, let's look at it this way. This is the viewpoint that I take. Right now there's a war going on in Iraq, and the people there are shooting lead bullets at each other and murdering each other. Okay, I think we can all agree on that, whether no matter what your stance is or if you believe we should be there or whatever. But that's what's happening, okay? Then nobody can dispute that that's the fact that's going on. Yet at the same time, people like myself, and I'm not the only one, lots and lots and lots of people are filming these technologies, and there's, I believe, more than ample proof out there, evidence anyhow, that we have this technology, the human beings, our own military has this technology. Now, if that's true, why is it that that technology is remaining hidden from everybody else while murder is being committed across the ocean in Iraq by throwing lead bullets at each other? Obviously, if the technology is real and we have these things, then war is ludicrous, more ludicrous than it's ever been, because we don't need to do that.
You have to understand that no weapon is a weapon unless you use it.
True, but my point is, why are we sacrificing human lives when we have this technology already that's being suppressed?
During Gulf War I, everyone around the world sat absolutely amazed at all of this new high-tech smart bombs and missiles flying down smokestacks and through a window and things like that. We'd never seen anything like that before.
Yeah, I was there for
Okay. General Schwarzkopf gave a press conference, a bunch of them, but in one of his press conferences, he made the statement that if Saddam Hussein did not surrender and get out of Kuwait, that we had things, and this is almost a quote, okay? This is how I remember what he said. Mm-hmm. And this is pretty close to word for word. We have things to throw at him that he cannot begin to imagine.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reporters asked him to elaborate a little bit. And he said, well, you have to understand that all of this technology that you're so amazed with and that the world is so amazed with is obsolete.
That's right.
Okay. So, and he said that, you know, the true state of technology is 20, 40, 50 years ahead of what you see.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, I don't, you know, they certainly have not tried to hide the fact that we have technology way beyond what the world is seeing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't deploy it immediately. There's all kinds of tests, all kinds of things happening.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I ask about you saying that it's evil is because, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but the word itself is it's in the realm of the language of morality.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think it is a question of morality. Right now I'm staring at the cost of war in Iraq, and we're up to $488 billion of the taxpayer money right now, today. That's what we spent going over there. And
the thing is, though, that if this technology has its origin off-world,
mm-hmm.
if it is alien technology, extraterrestrial technology, I'm not sure that our understanding of morals even comes into play for those guys.
No, it doesn't. Absolutely not. I mean, when you start get, which is something that my research is taking me into heavily, is the global network of the satanic cabal that actually controls the world. And I'm sure you've had many, many guests on speaking on the subject. And that's. You know, where my research has led me to is that there's a deception that goes far beyond controlling technology, whether it's human or alien human technology or whatever you want to call it. Everybody is waking up to the fact that we have been purposely stuck been stuck into this reality that it doesn't need to be this way anymore, and it hasn't needed to be this way, if you want to believe artificial timelines even, and it hasn't needed to be this way for four decades. So what are we doing? Still drilling oil and, you know, still having wars, old style with guns and ammunition and all, and costing, you know, hundreds of thousands of lives.
Would it be more moral if we had some type of a, I'll just say a ray weapon of some kind, and we float up over an army and incinerate them into ash? Would that be more moral?
No, I don't find war in any form to be moral. My point is just the cost of lives being the way it is now, when, you know, if you're so inclined to begin a war with somebody and you had these other technologies, it seems like they could be subdued a lot easier. But my actual belief underneath all of that is that all of this war from the beginning has been put upon people, that war is just another way for these so-called elite, I don't find them to be too elite. I find them to be the most savage example of people that exist on this planet, if they are even people. Well, now
that brings up a good question.
Sure.
And we're almost out of time. I wish we'd have gotten to this question earlier, but I didn't think of it, so we'll get to it now.
All right.
There's a theory out there that some of these folks that you're talking about may not actually be human.
I've said that on my last interview. I made that comment. I absolutely believe that these people, all the way to the highest office currently in this country, the highest office, are practicing Satanists, that they're extremely serious people, and that they've given their wills and their actual soul over to this whole process. And that's nothing new. It's been this way from the beginning. It's just that now is the time when this truth is revealed to the masses. And that it's actually demonic power that's running the whole show. And this is the reason that there are so many satanic... I mean, you go to Washington, D.C., most of the people, your listeners, are familiar with this type of thing, the Freemasons who built the Washington Monument that's posing, and, you know, with his shirt off, posing as Baphomet, all the way up the line. I mean, there's just dozens of examples of Satanism in Washington, D.C. And it speaks a lot to how long, you know, this has been going on.
Do you seriously think that Satanism goes all the way to the highest office in this land?
Absolutely. On my own website, on the links page, I have numerous pictures of, people in the highest offices giving satanic gestures to each other. And if you look into it just a little bit, it doesn't take much time at all. A good place to start is YouTube. Look up Satanism on YouTube. And that's a good way. Video information is a really good way to... get to the point and find things. And yeah, you know, and anybody who wants to say that it's because this particular fellow is from Texas and he's a Longhorns fan, well, there's also photographs like one I just ran across recently where he's standing next to Queen Elizabeth, and if you look at his left hand, he's not flashing the satanic sign to anybody, but his hand is, he's making the satanic sign, and he's got it right down beside him, beside his leg, you know. On purpose, with one of his little beady-eyed grins on his face, and that's the photograph. And I don't think there were too many Longhorn fans present at that particular photograph shoot. So, you know, yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of evidence there. And these people like to hide out in the open, so to speak. You know, they do these things, make these gestures, you know, and then look at their policies, you know.
Don't get into the policies, okay? That gets us off into some people support them, some people don't.
Right, okay, and, no problem. Yeah.
But look, and I really have to apologize, because I know there are going to be a lot of people that will say, I cut this interview short because of the subject matter you got into. That's not the case. It's the clock.
Right.
We are about 20 seconds away from the outro taking over.
Yeah, well, I'd love to do another interview with you. I'd definitely have a lot more to talk about.
Now, very quickly, tell us your web address. The link is on my site, but tell us your web address. People can go and look and make up their own minds.
Right, exactly. It's UFOs, plural, UFOs over Area 51.com.
All right.
And Yeah, it's a brand new site. I've just switched it over from the old one. And I'd like to say just real quick, I know you're out of time here, but all the videos, there's no membership or anything like that. All the videos are absolutely free. Everything I'm doing is absolutely free. There are two columns of Google Ads on the homepage, on the front page. If you believe in my message and you'd like to help me out, that's the only way that I make a nickel off of this at all, to kind of help perpetuate the site. So if you're so inclined to do so, I'd encourage people to click on those ad links a little bit and help me out if they'd like to.
All right. John, just stay on the line with me for a moment. Folks, we're out of time. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again, all right? Until Monday, so long, everybody.